It's a business and labor committee, let's do it.
Okay.
On time.
We'll call to order the House Committee on Business and Labor on May the 9th. Our first order of business is a public hearing on Senate Bill 36.
Mr. Chair, Committee Member, Senate Bill 36A passed unanimously out of the Business, Transportation, and Economic Development Committee and off the Senate floor with a 24-4 vote. What the measure does is it clarifies that the Oregon Liquor Control Commission may refuse to license an applicant if they've been convicted of any general or local law in Oregon or another state if the conviction is substantially related to the applicant's fitness and ability to carry out the license's privileges. You have in front of you, Member, three separate amendments, the dash A4, A5, and A6. They all focus on adding the condition of operating a licensed premise in violation of either a local or county zoning law to the list of items in which the OLCC can refuse to issue a license.
Okay. We have Senator Mona Sanderson here, please. Senator, please give us your name and proceed.
Thank you, Co-Chair Kennemeyer, Chair Shopland, members of the committee. I'm Senator Lori Mona Sanderson, Representative Gresham, Troutdalewood Village in Fairview, and I'm delighted to be here to bring forward Senate Bill 36. As you know, OLCC bills can be quite controversial because everyone wants changes. Fairview was the one who brought this bill to me and said that they would like some help with having a license being revoked. And I said, well, we'll see what we can do. So I worked with Bill Perry and the small convenience stores, and this is what we came up with. It is the A. Engrossed. We find that some liquor establishments really do cause problems, and the local jurisdictions get so upset when they give an unfavorable recommendation, but OLCC grants the license without restriction. And so this bill is before you. We think it's a good, meaningful step toward addressing some of the concerns that our local jurisdictions have. And it just simply states that all violations of state laws can be considered when granting a liquor license, including a potential licensee's drug and violent crime convictions. And this authority will help stop some problem taverns from locating in communities. So it is a compromise between OLCC and the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association, and I urge your support. And I do know that there are a lot of amendments. There are three amendments, and I was told not to mention them by the chair. But I do want you to know that they all, the dash A4s, the A5s, and the A6s are amendments that basically say that OLCC, it'll just give some more tools to OLCC that they can deny a liquor license if A4s say if the establishment violates a local zoning law, and the A5s is if the establishment violates a county zoning law, and then the A6 basically says if the county determines that the establishment violates a county zoning law. So it all has to do with zoning laws. So I would urge your support, not necessarily for the amendments, because I want the original bill to pass.
I see. Representative Esco.
Yeah, Senator, I hope this works. I was on a city council, and we would listen to these people come that had problems. We would recommend no licensing with OLCC, and it was completely ignored. The whole process, in my opinion, is a joke. Thank you.
Thank you. And your city and your opinion is shared by many local jurisdictions, but it's very difficult working. No, I shouldn't say that. But with the Oregon Liquor, with the Oregon Restaurant Association, because the small convenience stores have a real issue on this too. But this is one more tool, and those amendments are more tools that the OLCC can have to deny a license. But you'll hear from
Chair Schaffer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a lot of issues in land use we got to deal with, and I'm not joking when I say mining aggregate is one of them. And we want to have that conversation I'm open to it, but not in this bill. Thank you very much.
Okay. Any further questions or comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you, committee.
Okay.
Have a good day. Another
Art
week.
Art Schlatt, please.
Thank you, Senator.
Good morning.
Good morning and welcome.
Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, my name is Art Schlatt. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. And I guess I'm here to speak, even though they're not my amendments at this point, in support of the Dash 4, 5, and 6, which would provide an opportunity for the OLCC to at least consider local land use regulations when they are looking at issuing licenses under their purview. I have been in meetings where I have been told by the representatives of OLCC that since statute does not provide that they at least look at local land use regulations, they ignore them. They are not part of what's in statute that they should consider. And as I just heard from Representative Esquivel, who had at one point represented the city, he understands the concern, I think, that certainly are expressed by counties and also by cities with respect to that when OLCC receives an application for a license and that they are reviewing that and the local government responds in terms of the land use regulations that are in effect locally, that they are not considered. At a minimum, I believe that OLCC should place that liquor license on hold until the applicant has resolved the local land use restrictions. What you see in terms of what happens in reality is OLCC issues a license. The individual, the applicant, then has a liquor license, and they go ahead and begin to make commitments and investments with respect to, you know, what they want to do at this point. And I think that, needless to say, if I got the license, I'd probably do that too as an individual. However, if there are land use implications at play, those should be resolved to make sure that the establishment is consistent with local land use regulations. And it's unfortunate that many times local government is faced in terms of either lawsuits or enforcement kinds of activities, which takes a lot of time and money. And a licensee at this point with a liquor license in hand has expended a considerable amount of money in some instances and then are faced with the local government saying, I'm sorry, you can't do this there. And so placing at least language in statute that would direct OLCC to at least consider local land use regulations when reviewing a permit, I think, is appropriate, and we would support that. I have another amendment to another bill at this point, but seeing these amendments, I think that they would do the job if we talked about, if they were, I guess, kind of combined into one amendment that say consider local land use regulations at this point. So with that, I'd answer questions.
Which Doherty, Representative Doherty, are you in line? And then Matthews, thank you.
Thank you very much. What can you give me an example of what land use laws would be violated by an OLCC permit?
If the establishment was not in a on land that was zoned for food and drink, mm-hmm. at this point, that wasn't a permitted or a conditional use. If it was a conditional use within that zone, if the conditional use had not been issued, you could also be in a rural area and you could be, again, applying for a liquor license. And, again, you could be in an exclusive farm use zone. There's a number of different examples that I could provide.
That's what I figured, but I just wanted to see if we were on the same page.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Matthews, and then
the
chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just a comment, and if you would like to respond to it, you can. I guess my concern is we have a bill that comes over from the Senate, and we have a chance to pass what seems to be a compromise and some strong work, and then now we look at several amendments that we're hearing testify people are in favor of. It seems to me that then all of a sudden we're going to be facing that opposition again. This will not be a bill that will pass, and Senate Bill 36 dies in the House. Any comment you'd like to offer on that? And Mr. Chair, I just want to be clear. I'm a fan of getting people to work together collaboratively, making efforts, taking small steps towards success. What I'm not a fan of is asking for so much that we can't get anything. And I want to be careful of that. So please respond to that if you would.
Mr. Co-Chairs, Representative Matthews, this issue has been around for a number of years. And it raised its head more recently in hearings before the Senate on Senate Bill 960. And at that point, it was felt that it would be, if there was an opportunity to address this issue now, it would be in the best interest of the state of Oregon at this point. I understand it's kind of latent in the system at this point. The association's interest is to identify this problem or issue as something that needs attention, and if the legislature determines that it is late in the session and we need to, you know, that we can consider this, then the AOC will certainly look at a bill for February of next year to do exactly this thing.
Chair Schaffler.
Thank you. Art, I agree we have a very, you mentioned and touched on our litigious process here. Couldn't agree more. I'm sympathetic, as I told you in my office, to a license holder who finds out that the zoning isn't squared away with their license. I'm sympathetic to that. But I got to tell you, our process is made up to obstruct, delay, prohibit, and deny people from going into business. That's what's going on in this state. Now, we have something to protect. I made it very clear to you, too. We have a lot to protect in this state and defend. It's a beautiful place, and there's nobody up here that wants to not protect it. But you know what? It takes millions of dollars and a minimum of 5 years to get a permit to mine aggregate. And we're talking about land use now. And you brought up the subject of land use, and we're going to talk about the whole thing. And that's a problem. You have people at local level making decisions saying no, not because there isn't a local need for aggregate, but because a small handful of people come in and scream and bellyache because they may get a little dust on their flowers. You know, I've had it up to here with it. So this bill right here is a good bill, should pass as it is. I'm ready to move on. If you want to have a conversation about land use, Art, I'm open to a conversation about land use. But it's going to include a lot more than just this, and nickel and diming, and making a process for this licensure so that those, when you talk about the governing body would just consider it, what that means is a public hearing considering it, and you know who it's going to draw out. All the naysayers who have their little part of Oregon and are unwilling to let someone else have their part of Oregon, too. And that's why we're stuck where we are today in this economy, too. People can blame the global economic meltdown all they want, but I got news for you. The reason we don't have people going to work faster and increasing the larger numbers is because of our process that we've made. And I was a deciding vote to put Measure 49 on the ballot to rewrite Measure 37, so I'm not going to listen to anybody come in here and talk, say that Mike Schaffler doesn't care about land use in Oregon. But I did say hello to Rich and remind him that you changed his diapers Saturday. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Co-Chairs, Representative Schaffler, I appreciate your comments and your concerns at this point. The land use system is a complicated system at this point, and it's hard to put everything into, let's shall we say, one envelope at this end. My intent here, as I indicated, is to raise the issue before the legislature, and I will do that before the Senate this afternoon also. And this is an issue that I would hope that the legislature, if they don't want to look at it this session, that they certainly will look at it in February of 12. Thank you.
Follow up, please, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Chair Schaffler, follow up.
And Art, we always look forward to working with our partners from local government.
We appreciate that.
A couple of different things. Let me just say, you know, I appreciate you bringing these forward. I think there is an issue here. I also think it's a sensitive issue because some of our land use, in my mind, is antiquated and makes it very difficult to find realistic modern solutions to the siting of, for example, wineries in some of these things. So I tend to agree it probably needs a different venue. Let's go first to Representative Esquivel and then Representative Doherty. Doherty?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's the basic bill is a good bill. As for the complications of land use itself, we make it complicated, Art. Bureaucracy makes it complicated. It's actually a very common sense approach, and we don't use that.
And Representative Doherty?
Okay. I have a question about the amendments and kind of the need for them. And the reason is that, I mean, I've been on planning commissions, and if a certain establishment wants to go through and let, for example, come to the city of Tigard, if they don't follow the land use laws, we don't approve their building, we don't approve their facility, we don't approve their changing. And so it seems to me this just gives OLCC another added it's like it gives them an added power that the cities and states already have, cities and counties already have. Am I off base on this one? Or, I mean, because if the cities have already said you can't do it, then why is the OLCC saying we can't give you a license?
Chair Schaffler and also Chair Kennemer, Representative Doherty, we're not asking the OLCC to enforce local land use regulations. What we find that takes place is that OLCC goes ahead and issues a license, a liquor license, even though the local jurisdiction has commented that the land use regulations, there's a problem with the land use regulations, okay. may not be appropriate. Once they have the liquor license, then they go ahead and either start the business or do stuff, and then the local government has to go through the enforcement process. And so that is, as I've indicated, is time-consuming, and it's very costly. And it's costly not only for the local government, but it's also costly for the applicant at this point. All we're asking, and these amendments, the amendments are not ones that I submitted. I just want the committee to know that. I did not bring these. I was made aware of them. It does address the issue that we have at this point. And so that's why I'm here in support of them.
Okay, thank you for your explanation. Good.
Who did bring these amendments?
I do not know.
Getting rid of
but they were anyway. Okay. I just want the co-chairs to know, even though I did speak to you, both of you, about this issue, these are not my amendments at this point.
Okay.
But that guy right back there, that gentleman said he submitted them.
Okay.
Kind of knows.
Thank you. Yeah, if you want to come forward for a second, you didn't register, but that's fine. Give us your name and proceed.
Yeah, my name's Matt Anderson. I'm assistant to Senator Monis Anderson, and at the request of the OLCC, I submitted the A4, 5, and 6 amendments. If there's any questions, I'll answer them.
Okay, thank you very much. Any further questions, comments? Seeing none, thank you. Ms.
Thank
Curry?
You. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you for that clarification, Matt.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Bill Perry at the Oregon Restaurant Association, and we're here in support of Senate Bill 36 as it's currently written. Obviously, this does expand a little bit what can be used as a licensee at time for renewal against the licensee, but it basically expands it so it still has to be in connection with the operation of the liquor license. And so this was something that Senator Monis Anderson worked very diligently on, and so she came to an agreement that we could live with, and so that's why we're here today. As far as the amendments on the land use, I Basically, I think a lot of us on this committee have had frustrations with the OLCC sometimes, and sometimes you think they don't do enough, and some people think they do too much. I think from my personal opinion, I would hope they would focus on concentration on service to minors and over-service, which I think is their job. I think land use, as we all know, is a very complicated issue, and asking an agency to even consider it opens up a can of worms. And I think the important thing here is, when you're talking about land use planning, it's the business operation that is the violation, not the service of alcohol. And so the service of alcohol is one small piece. And so when the example was used earlier, a restaurant opens. Okay, a restaurant gets a building permit from a local jurisdiction. They get their health permit from a local jurisdiction. And the liquor license is later on in the process. If you look at wedding receptions and wineries, it's not the service of alcohol, it's the violation, it's the wedding reception. And so you could have a wedding reception and have a caterer serve alcohol, you could have a wedding reception and not serve alcohol, the violation still occurs absent of the liquor license. And so a liquor license is only a piece of the business operation, and so to ask more agencies to get involved in liquor license law, which you and I both agree is extremely confusing, I don't think is helpful. If we want to address should an underlying business be operating in a certain zone, I think it's a legitimate question to be addressed, but I don't think OLCC wading into it makes it any easier for anybody. So I'm okay with the underlying bill. I would appreciate if none of these amendments were added, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Comments? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Murray. Yeah. Anyone else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 36?
Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, I'm Dave Barenberg from the City of Portland, and I will be very brief. I'd like to support the work that was done in the bill that came over from you and say that the land use issue that you've been hearing about is a good one to have work done, and I look forward to having discussions about this over the interim. And I thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Chair Schaffler.
And David, this committee always looks forward to working with our partners in local government to make the best statutory policy this state can have. And thanks for thanks for shutting your phone off before you come in today, too.
Yes. We'll not have any search and seizure, however, in this group. Okay.
You always start my week out fine, Mr. Chair.
We don't lack for entertainment in this committee. Yeah, we appreciate it. Thank you very much. And is there anyone else wishing to speak about mining gravel or anything else before we close this hearing? Seeing none, we'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 36. Is there a wish to move this forward in the work session?
I would like to open a work session with the agreement of the committee and pass this bill on as it's written.
Okay. We will open a work session on Senate Bill 36.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 36A to the floor to pass recommendation.
Okay. Chair Schaffler moves Senate Bill 36A to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none. Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. We need a carrier.
We'll take it.
Representative Esquivel will carry. Representative, you're comfortable carrying it when you had some concerns earlier. Just want to be sure.
Oh, yeah.
Fine. Okay.
Thank you, sir. This had nothing to do with that. That other situation was, it was okay. Just a local thing that they, whatever you recommended didn't matter.
Yeah. Okay. We're ready to proceed with the hearing on Senate Bill 92.
Mr. Chair, Committee Member, Senate Bill 928 empowers the Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services to regulate the activities of out-of-state financial institutions and also outlines conditions in which an out-of-state financial institution may obtain a certificate of authority to operate in the state. There is an emergency clause in the measure effect upon passage. The measure was voted out unanimously out of the General Government and Consumer Protection Committee and off the Senate floor with a 19-10 vote. Members, you have in front of you a -A2 amendment which deletes sections 24 and 25. These sections would give the Department of Consumer and Business Services the enforcement authority over financial holding companies and bank holding companies. There is no revenue impact on the amendment. There is a fiscal statement issued and is identical to the fiscal statement on the A engrossed measure.
Okay. We have two folks scheduled to testify, David Tapman and Tim Martinez, please. Please give us your name. Let's proceed.
Chair, good morning. Chair Kennemer and Co-Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, my name is David Tapman. I'm the administrator for the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities. And just a few preliminary remarks, and I'll go to the testimony. One, slight snafu, and I apologize for that. I dropped the ball Friday and did not get the testimony that I presented in writing here today electronically to you, and I apologize for that. My goal is to try and save trees. Two, it's quite an honor to be here with Mr. Martinez. That doesn't happen very often. I know that lumberjack types with their galooses and beards are supportive of all trees, and so I understand we're going to do the right thing. This is a bill that we took in front of the Senate, as you heard, and I'll just cut to the chase. There's a number of issues. I've talked with most of the members of the committee, and I know Mr. Martinez has as well. We are in full agreement on all but the one provision that's addressed in the A2s. And so the two points I want to address, I'll just do it extemporaneously. You can look in my testimony.
Thank you. I appreciate you shortening it.
The one is that we are asking for authority to look at out-of-state banks that want to come in and do business in the state of Oregon. Historically, the law in Oregon did not allow banks to come in and start doing business in Oregon. They had to find an existing bank that had been around for 3 years or more. It was essentially just a barrier to entry, and we didn't think that was a good business practice, but that was the de rigueur of it. That was the standard. The Dodd-Frank Act said, no, we're not going to do that anymore, and so both federal and out-of-state banks can now come into the state. Here's our concern. They come in, but they come in as either a federal bank or they come in as a bank of under Wyoming regulation or Montana regulation or Georgia regulation. In some states, regulation may not be as robust as we want. We want to make sure if a bank comes in that they're safe and sound and they're properly operated and that the people in Oregon can trust that operation. So what we want to do is what we do in all other circumstances, and that is make a thorough review of the bank's operation, make sure that the people involved are of an appropriate level of skill and experience, make sure the bank is soundly capitalized, make sure the operations are lawful and they don't violate the laws in other jurisdictions before they come in. To do that takes a fair amount of work. Now, we do the same thing anytime a bank comes in and merges with a bank in Oregon, or when a bank wants to start up and start as what we call a de novo, a new bank in Oregon. So you'll see there's a fee involved. That fee is $2,500, and I know in this body that's fairly eye-catching. The reality is twofold. One, we already charge $2,500 to do the same thing when we're engaged in a merger review. Two, we're talking about banks that are at a minimum of $10 million and more. That fee really is not a large penalty. And second of all, it reflects the amount of time it takes to do this. We think this is an important piece in the registration process, that if we don't do this, once a bank comes in, we're basically at the mercy of other regulatory bodies. So I think that's good policy, and I know the Oregon Bankers Association supports that. The other issue, and the vast majority of the time I want to speak to this, is the question of bank holding companies. Now, bank holding company is nothing more but a parent corporation that owns the bank. That is the preferred methodology of bank ownership in Oregon. For legal and regulatory purposes, there are real advantages to doing that. Of the 26 banks we have in Oregon, 19 of them have bank holding companies, parent corporations. Most of them have a single asset, and that is the bank they own. So it allows for the raising of capital and allows for providing, as they say in the regulatory business, a source of strength to the underlying bank. It is the bank that sells its shares to raise capital, and then they pass that money down to the, it's a bank holding company that sells its shares to raise capital and pass the money down to the bank. Now, we have full examination authority over both banks and over bank holding companies. We also have authority to enforce the laws against banks. Where we have a hole in the regulatory donut is over bank holding companies. We do not have enforcement authority. One, I submit that that's not good regulatory practice. If we're authorized to do the examination, but then we have to refer it to somebody else and work off of their time frame, their timetable, that does not work well. Two, I would also submit, and I think this is important, and this gets lost in the give and take, because there's no question that Mr. Martinez and I generally agree on this, but we disagree here. And I think what gets lost is we are the local regulators. We are the ones who advocate on behalf of these 26 banks. The other regulator is the Federal Reserve Board. They have 7,000 banks that they're responsible for. They don't care about the state of Oregon banks. We care about the state of Oregon banks. We are here to make sure that there's an advocate on behalf of the banks. We can advocate to make sure the penalty fits the problem and not just use a general cookie-cutter, one-size-fits-all enforcement response. And two, we can advocate when it's time to take the enforcement action off the table and let them get back to the business as norm. I think that's very important. I urge you, in my testimony, there's a letter from Islanders Bank. That's a bank up in Washington. There's a gentleman by the name of Brad Williamson. He's the president of the bank. He was a former regulator. He in Washington brought forth back in 2010, a very similar bill. And with the support of the Washington Bankers Association, that bill passed it unanimously. And he said he felt passionately enough about this because he feels that local presence is so critical when you're dealing with local banks. And so I don't want to undersell that point. It's a very important point for this body to understand that we can be a presence and not just a problem. The other thing is we've heard that there's a fair amount of burden, regulatory exhaustion. The banks feel like they've gone through a lot of regulatory changes. No question, Dodd-Frank did bring a lot of changes. We're still not sure where they're all going to land, and it's going to take years between the courts and Congress to figure that out. I will say this, though. If you look at the bill, the proposal, this is not a regulatory burden. We're not asking for any additional authority in terms of violations, added new requirements, restrictions, and alike. What we're saying is, if there is a violation, let's have the authority to deal with it locally. We think that's a good business practice. We think that's sound regulatory practice. And so I would urge the committee to consider adopting the bill, just as the Senate did in its current format. And I'll take questions now or after Mr. Martinez.
Right there. Thank you. Question, Chair Schaffler?
Oh, I just had an answer. Thank you.
Oh. So you don't support the Dash 2 amendments?
We like the bill as it is, Chair Canemer.
Okay.
And I would, Mr. Chair, by the way.
Chair Schaffler?
Yeah. Mr. Tapman, thanks for coming. But you made a comment about the Federal Reserve, who watch over all the federally regulated banks, and the global economic meltdown, all this business about big, giant Wall Street banks. They're doing the best they can with what they got. Maybe they could have done better. I don't know. It's above my pay grade.
Mm-hmm.
But you said they don't care about state-regulated banks. I just don't believe that. I don't believe the Federal Reserve is in, maybe their statutory power is indifferent to and does not apply to, but the comment that they don't care, I think, is pushing it a little bit. That's my humble opinion.
May I respond?
It's a free country. It's America.
I still have to go through you two, but if you don't mind. Co-chairs, there's an interesting debate in the American Bankers Association just this last 2 weeks ago. American Bankers Association is the trade newspaper for banks, federal, state, throughout the country. And the article of April 27th said, the community bank is no spotted owl. And what they were saying was the community bank is alive, vibrant, and strong. Mm-hmm. And I believe that, personally. And I think the community bank does a great job. In response to that, though, interestingly enough, there was a statement from a gentleman. This is a national newspaper, but the gentleman happens to be Bob McKean, Chief Executive Officer of Albina Community Bank, Portland, Oregon. And this is what he said. Our federal regulators project an attitude about community banks that mirrors the attitude of big banks to their small commercial accounts. They love to talk about how much they care about them and they want to serve them while developing policies, procedures, and incentive systems to make it increasingly difficult to do business with them. Then he goes on to say, so don't talk to me about how the regulatory burden is the same for small banks as large ones. There's no objective support for such a position. I agree with you, Chair Schauffele. Using the verb, I don't care, it was an overstatement, and I withdraw that. But there's no question that they don't have the same perspective that we have. We want our banks to survive and do well. They've got 7,000 banks. If they close one bank in Pendleton, Oregon, and the 6,999 banks are still going strong, they're going to look at that as a win. We're going to look at that as one more bank gone in a community, and that community is not thriving. And that's what I meant to say, and I appreciate you giving me a chance to clarify that.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions or comments? Thank you, Mr. Martinez.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Co-Chair Schauffele, members of the committee, Tim Martinez here on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association. I don't want to start off with a he said, but I would say that the comments that Mr. Tatton was talking about, both in the American Banker and in the Mr. McKean's response, really has nothing to do with this bill or with our amendment. We do enjoy, having said that, working with DCBS. This is one of the few times I've been up at the dais with him, but we do enjoy working with him. I think it was 2009 and that they were looking for a substantial fee increase in order to hire more examiners and to hire more qualified and experienced examiners. My CEO, as well as one of our chairmen and CEOs of a bank, testified in very strong support of that. So we do work very well generally with DCBS, the bank regulator. And as Mr. Tatman said, we are in agreement with the overwhelming majority of this bill. I would call this bill generally a housekeeping bill, except for the fact that it does have the fee increase, which we are not opposed to, and then also the issue of the holding company. Just a little bit of background. We're a very strong association, a very strong believer in the dual charter banking system. I remember a few years ago when the department came to me, when a newly elected member of the legislature came to town, and they had this idea that, well, since the feds regulate banks, we don't need any regulation of state banks. And I think the department would tell you that we went to work immediately on that issue with that particular legislator, and that issue was dropped and was never introduced. So we are strong believers in the dual charter banking system, and this is a part of that. Dodd-Frank, he talked about, and I'm going to steal that line from Mr. Tatman, regulatory exhaustion, because that is exactly what banks face today. Dodd-Frank, at a minimum, probably creates up to 300 new regulations. Whether you're a community bank, whether you're Wells Fargo, whether you're a credit union, you're looking at up to 300 new regulations. It's going to cost a fortune. Obviously, the larger banks are better able to absorb that, but community banks are going to face real tough times just trying to meet the requirements of Dodd-Frank. In 2009, this, as part of their then housekeeping bill, they included this language. The House Consumer Protection Committee, which I didn't have a lot of successes in last session, those of you that were around will remember, and some of you were on that committee, removed this section at that time, and the Senate did not add it back. So again, we would ask for the A2s. The last piece I would add, or two last pieces I would add, one is an example. He's right. Mr. Tamman is absolutely right. They get to come in and regulate not only the, or examine, excuse me, not only the bank, but also the holding company. If they find something at the holding company level, they do report that to the Federal Reserve, just like anybody else. I mean, I'm not sure if you have a letter from the Conference of State Bank Supervisors dated March 18th or a more current version, but in that letter, they state, the Federal Reserve is the only federal regulator that can take enforcement actions against bank holding companies. And that's whether you're a small bank or whether you're, pick one, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase. It's the same for everybody. So an example I'd like to provide, this holding company was doing, as I understand it, their board minutes both as a bank and a holding company together. DCBS contacted the Federal Reserve and said, we don't think this is appropriate and they ought to have separate board minutes. The Federal Reserve, and this is not a huge bank, this is not a billion-dollar bank, this is a small bank, contacted that bank, and indeed they did say, please separate your board minutes, and of course the bank went ahead and took that action. So we think the current system works. And that would be the last thing I would say is, don't misunderstand, the bank holding companies they're talking about in this legislation are Oregon banks. They're not, again, the big multi-state banks. And the last example I would give would be on the dual charter system. If you walk around this town and you see the big banks, you're probably going to guess right away that they are a federally chartered institution. If you walk about five blocks down State Street here and come to a corner where there's a tiny little bank called Pioneer Trust Bank, it's a national bank, and it's made that decision that that's where it wants to be regulated. So again, we're strong supporters of the dual charter system. We believe different regulators play different roles, and in this case, we believe the Federal Reserve does a good job regulating Oregon's bank holding companies. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Doherty, please.
It seems the issue, the state can go through and investigate holding companies, and then they go through and they pass on the enforcement to the Fed, or the investigation, or both.
Mr. Co-Chairs, Madam Co-Vice Chair Doherty, members of the committee, that's correct.
Okay. Then I guess my question is the problem a problem of timeliness? Does it take the Feds five times longer to investigate the holding company and to go through and have the enforcement and to get it down to the state, or is that part of what the issue is? Either gentleman.
Thank you. Mr. Co-Chairs, Representative Doherty, there is a significant delay in the process because it has to go from us to the people in San Francisco, which is a regional branch, and then it goes back to Washington, D.C., where they convene the committee, which is made up of the highest officials, and has to get on their agenda and so forth. Something like separating out the minutes between a bank and a bank holding company, not a problem. If that takes 3 or 4 months, I'm not concerned about that. What I'm concerned about, if we have a problem where there's a financial problem and we need money getting down to the bank ASAP, and we've got to wait 3 or 4 months to get an order out of Washington, D.C. to tell that bank holding company, you can't take any more dividends, that money's got to go downstream to the bank. We don't want to wait that long, because we could have a reputational risk problem where people are out getting concerned. As I mentioned in my testimony, I don't anticipate us having to use this that often, but it's a critical place that we need to be able to do it when it happens. Again, I don't think it's a burden for the banks. It's just good regulatory practice. If I may just diverge just for a second, I've neglected to say, and I think Mr. Martinez underscores this point, although the Federal Reserve Board has this authority, 35 states also have enforcement authority. We're not asking to do this brand new. We're asking to join the majority of the states to do just that. So, again, it's not unique that states would do this. In fact, it's good business practice, as I said. Washington just adopted this.
Representative Baskerville. Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions. One is that where in the past has this happened that we've had a problem with the holding company? And second question is, you said 35 states have this ability. What about the other 15 states? Is there a problem in those other 15 states?
Co-chairs, Representative Esquivel, I can't give you names.
that would breach the confidentiality. But I can tell you just this past year, we were on the phone with the Federal Reserve Board. They were looking at bringing in private equity. That's the preferred method for funding when banks are low in capital. And they were asking us, should we let this company in? And we were saying, we think that you need to do this. We didn't have the ability to march in there together and say, this is what we want done. All we could do was get on the phone and give them our opinion. And then it goes back into the black hole in D.C. And eventually, in this case, God willing, it came out okay. But that's a problem. We want to be able to address that as co-equals at the chair.
Follow-up, Representative Vesico.
So what you're saying is the system actually does work?
Representative Kennemer, Representative Schaffler, I'm saying that we're able to talk with them, but there are times where we want to be able to talk to them in a different manner. There's an alternative. Does the system work? It doesn't work as effectively as it could if we were to modify the law. We've got situations where banks have come off of enforcement actions. We've taken them off the action because they've cleaned up the problems they've had. They're no longer subject to an enforcement action. They're still, the bank holding company is still subject to this enforcement action. It should have been lifted a long time ago. We've told the Federal Reserve that. The banks told them that. They haven't gotten around to doing it. There's a great example where we could be doing the right thing for that federal, for that bank holding company, but we have our hands tied because we don't have the authority.
Representative Doherty?
Okay, I'm still trying to come up with the reason as to why the banks would not want to do this. So you've got the local banks, you've got their holding companies that, well, they own the banks. And so the question is this more of an advantage for the holding companies or and as a disadvantage for the banks or vice versa? Because I'm just wondering why the banks would not want a quicker remedy to what they what their holding company is doing.
Mr. Chair, Co-Chair Schaffler, Co-Vice Chair Doherty, members of the committee, I will tell you that this concept has been around for a few years. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the issues that the OBA board has looked at extensively in the last few years. And both in 2009 and in 2007, the board was unanimous in their opposition. They realize that Washington has gone down this road. They realize that other states have gone down this road. Our board, and obviously it changes, people, membership changes every couple of years, so you've had different folks look at this, continue to believe that the current system works. I can assure you, and I appreciate Mr. Tapman's recent example here about how they didn't lift it off the holding company. I can assure you that if that was an issue to that particular holding company, they would have contacted the association and asked us to take a look at that and see if there was something they could do. Again, as part of the dual charter system, as part of different regulators doing different activities and having different responsibilities over financial institutions, we think that works, and we think this is an example of that. As I mentioned earlier, the Federal Reserve, except in these states, is the only regulator over the holding company, and we think that that system works fine today and do not see a need to change it. And I guess the last thing I would say is, again, we're looking at a tremendous amount of new regulation, not necessarily in this area because the state already has that authority, but we believe that the current system works well.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? Mr. Martinez, would you go back and readdress the Dash 2 amendments? Dash 2 amendments, would you
certainly
readdress those? Because I think that's the question before
sure.
us.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Kennemer, Co-Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, the Dash 2 amendments are the Oregon Bankers Association requested amendments. They delete any reference in Senate Bill 92A in gross to bank holding companies, so I believe they start with Section 23 and delete 23, 24, and 25 would be my expectation. Mm-hmm. Further questions, comments?
Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 92? Seeing none, we close the hearing on Senate Bill 92.
Mr. Chair, I'm prepared, if it's the will of the committee, to move the Dash A2 amendment and into the bill and pass the bill to the floor. Do pass recommendation.
Okay. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 92.
Mr. Chair, I move to dash A2 amendment in Senate Bill 92A.
Okay, Chair Schaffler moves the dash 2 amendment into Senate Bill 92. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Yes.
Please. You know, we have went through an economic meltdown, a crisis in this country and this globe. A lot of people have piled onto that to take what I consider political advantage of this crisis, not the department. But this bill, the bill we just heard, the federal government's 300 some new regulations, we are regulating and processing ourselves to death, economic death in this country. And you know what? While China laughs all the way to the bank with our debt, and I'm satisfied with the way this is all working now, being a layman and just a laborer. But I'm satisfied. That's my. I just wanted to explain why I support.
Okay. Any further discussion? Is there any objection to the dash 2 amendments?
Well, I guess it just the one question I have is this appears to be a situation. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Amen.
Kind of situation. So
I think that's the argument that's being made.
Okay. Thank you.
Are you comfortable with that? We can.
Okay.
Okay. Seeing no objections, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 92A as amended to the floor to pass recommendation.
Senate Bill 92 as amended is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none. Is there any objection? Seeing none, it is unanimous and so ordered. Do we have a volunteer to carry this bill?
Well, since I shot my mouth off, I will, Mr. Chair. Unless you want to put it on the consent calendar.
I think maybe we best...
can try that. I think we'll let Chair Schaffler carry this. Thank you very much. Thank you for doing that. Okay. We will open the hearing on Senate Bill 759. Please.
Chair, Committee Member, Senate Bill 759A passed unanimously out of the Senate Business Transportation and Economic Development Committee and off the Senate floor. The measure establishes a definition of gross neutral wagering for purposes of laws that are regulating horse racing and greyhound racing.
Okay. So, we'll have, Athena Douglas, is that right? Okay.
Do you think he's kidding?
Please.
Good morning, Chair Kemmer, Chair Schaffler, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Athena Douglas, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Horsemen's Benevolent and Protective Association in support of Senate Bill 759A. I believe you received this handout earlier, and they're passing out a letter in support for the Senate bill and amendments from the Racing Commission Executive Director, Mr. Evers. He could not make it today.
Okay. And we're in receipt of both of those documents. Thank you.
Basically, Senate Bill 759A seeks to define gross mutual wagering. Years ago, when horse racing started in Oregon, there was only one way to place bets. You went to the track, you placed your bet in person, you waited to see if you won, you got your payout, or walked away sad. Nowadays, you can bet that way or on the internet or through telephone calls. You can bet on virtually any race in the world through these methods. And so we want to define gross mutual wagering as the bets that occur in person at the tracks or the off-track betting sites. The other wagers are discussed in different portions of Chapter 462. We just wanted to basically draw big black lines between the different types, because then when they're referenced in the statutes or in the administrative rules, it's very clear which wagers you're talking about. And bottom line, this changes nothing about how it all works today. The bettors still bet the same way they bet, the operators operate the same way, and the state of Oregon is not affected by this one bit. It actually is housekeeping. It brings the statute back into, it retains its intended meaning. We're kind of in conflict at this point if we don't go ahead and pass this.
It's an important update.
Chair Shoffman?
And they're off.
No. Okay, anybody else wish to have a comment or question?
No, how do you follow something like that?
Well, I don't know. I just want to know if anybody placed any illegal bets on that.
Not today.
Not today. Thank you very much. Thank you. Glad to hear we're abiding by the law. Any further questions or comments of this witness? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else wishing to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we will close the hearing on Senate Bill 759. I think it's prepared to move forward. Mm-hmm. It would be my best guess. Let's have a work session on Senate Bill 759.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 759A to floor to due-pass recommendation.
Okay, Chair Schaffler moves Senate Bill 759 to the floor with the due-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Is there any objection? Seeing none. Since there's no objection, it is unanimous and approved. Let's see. Do we? This was it unanimous in the Senate as well?
I think it merits the consent calendar, Mr. Chair.
I would look to the proponent. Is there lobbying been done on the House? And do we? Would consent agenda be an appropriate place for this? Okay. Let's place it on the consent agenda then. Thank you very much. Okay. We will now open a hearing on Senate Bill 775.
Mr. Chair, Committee Members, Senate Bill 775A passed unanimously out of both the Senate Business, Transportation, and Economic Development Committee and off the Senate floor. The measure prohibits a manufacturer, distributor, or importer of motor vehicles from requiring a franchisee to enter into a site control agreement and also taking action against a franchisee due to the franchisee having an agreement with another manufacturer, distributor, or importer of motor vehicles.
Okay. Mr. Gallagher?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Gallagher, representing the Oregon Auto Dealers. Imagine sitting next to me is Paul Cosgrove, representing the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers, but he had to run
having
down.
Having trouble seeing him.
This is a... Well, he's taller than me.
Yeah.
At the OLCC budget hearing right now.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. Thank you.
Senate Bill 775 is a compromise, an agreement worked out between the manufacturers and the Oregon auto dealers, and it deals with the franchise laws, which are the contract restrictions on what contracting can occur in the franchise agreements between the auto dealers and the manufacturers. What we're doing on 775 is adding two additional conditions that the manufacturer cannot impose upon Oregon auto dealers. The two conditions are, number one, site control, which is defined on page 3 of the bill as the control over the actual physical properties the dealership sits on. After the meltdown of the auto industry in the last few years, some of these contracts had site control agreements in them that would prohibit the owner of the property from doing something else with the property, from leasing it to another dealership or selling other cars on it and so forth. So this removes that restriction, and it says that the manufacturer cannot force the dealer into a site control agreement unless there's valuable consideration, which is...
Can they have wedding receptions at these on this property?
As long as Bill Perry supplies the liquor, Mr. Chair, that's a permissible.
Forgive me, Mr. Chair.
I doubt it.
I'll have to check with Mr. Slack. So site control is important to the dealerships and allows them to have control of their property after they've been terminated by the manufacturer. The second one is a provision called dueling, and that has to do with offering two franchises or two different manufacturers products on the same site. And there's a provision in sub 14 of this section which addresses people who had dual franchises before 1999, and this new section 15 adds a dueling, allows dueling if the dealer meets all the conditions of the original manufacturer's obligations of the contract to the original manufacturer. The manufacturer cannot prohibit them from having a second franchise on that site. So we have more flexibility here for the auto dealers in Oregon to continue to remain in business and be profitable and move their product. And I really appreciate the fact that we're able to work this out with the manufacturers. Be happy to answer any questions.
Questions or comments?
Only, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
I'm confident we would have heard from our senator from Coos Bay if there was an issue with this. So we've seen how many years she spent in the auto dealer business.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Co-Chairman, yes, both Senator Berger and Senator Winters have relatives that are in the car business, and I check in with them before I do anything.
Okay. Any further questions or comments? Mm-hmm. So the auto dealers and the manufacturers are together on this bill.
We're fine.
Okay. Seeing none, thank you very much. Is there anyone else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 775? Seeing none, we will close the hearing. I think we might as well move to a work session on this.
I'm prepared, Mr. Chair.
Okay, let's open a work session on Senate Bill 775.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 775, A to 4, to pass recommendation.
Okay, Chair Schaffner moves Senate Bill 775 forward with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any discussion on moving Senate Bill 775 to the floor with due pass recommendation? Mm-hmm. Seeing none. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. I think this passed out of the Senate unanimously. It's coming out of this committee unanimously. Do we think it's a consent agenda item?
I believe it merits the consent agenda, Mr. Chair.
And I see a nod from Mr. Gallagher. Let's put it on the consent agenda, please. Thank you all very much. Okay, let's open a hearing on Senate Bill 806, please.
Mr. Chair, Committee Member, Senate Bill 806A passed unanimously out of the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee and off the Senate floor. What the measure does, it grants the statutory right to an owner or occupant of either commercial or industrial property to install xeriscaping on the property's landscape portions. The measure also specifies that local government may regulate such xeriscaping for the purposes of stormwater management, preservation of natural habitat, or tree canopy, or control of invasive species. Members, there is a correction on your preliminary staff measure summary. There was mention of a forthcoming amendment which would place the provisions of the measure in two separate chapters dealing with county planning and zoning and city planning and zoning respectively. However, Legislative Council said that amendment is not necessary since this does create a brand new statute. So there are no amendments.
There are no amendments. Okay. And let's have Tom Tibbs and Chris Speck both, please. Good morning.
Good morning. Chairs, Bill Kimmerer and Mr. Schaffler and the rest of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak in support of Senate Bill 806A. For the record, my name is Tom Tibbs. I am a private citizen and a small business owner. As a private citizen, I worked with Senator Olson and the League of Cities on this bill in the Senate to find a compromise that keeps the original intent of the bill to allow more flexibility in landscaping on industrial and commercial property, while also giving local governments the flexibility they need in their work. In the current economic climate where small business can provide a large number of needed jobs, this bill allows small business owners to build a new business facility without the additional cost of excessive landscaping by being allowed xeriscaping. Xeriscaping is the reduction of water use by 50% within a facility. This bill will give small business owners like myself the flexibility to use more ecological and cost-effective landscaping alternatives. I think this bill is necessary to support the reduction of water use and pollution and to make it easier for small business owners to develop projects and create jobs. This bill makes good business sense and good environmental sense. Thank you for your time and your consideration. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Chair Schaffel?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Gibbs, thank you for coming here. I appreciate what you're doing here. I'm in full support of this bill, but I just have to make a comment. It amazes me that we have to change the statute because you're not allowed to do this. That's how screwed up things are around here. I'm just amazed that any state regulation, rule, law, or any local ordinance would deny a legitimate business and property owner the ability to do this when clearly it's not only is it your, in my opinion, right to do it, but it's also the right thing to do. Mr. Chair, I'm dumbfounded. I'm almost speechless that we have to jump through these hoops to let Mr. Tibbs do what is not only his right, but the right thing to do. Thank you for bringing this forward.
Do we want to have a vote on speechless?
Probability? Maybe we just make that a gambling situation.
Yes.
Let me make a comment. Something about this, and it deals with, we've had to deal a lot with tree canopies and that kind of thing in a planning commission sense. And there are times that landscapers have come and have not done a good job of preserving the landscape, of making sure that there is tree canopy, that down the road they're not going to plant things that are going to die. And so I can see the reason for what the statute is, but yet on the other hand, it just seems that cities and counties also need to keep up with the times and the kind of landscaping like you do with the less water. So sometimes there is a purpose for this, but I agree with Representative Schaffler that sometimes it goes a little too far.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Representative, I would like an example of what we're discussing here. I mean, I understand landscaping where you have the lawn, you have all the bushes and all this stuff that's hooked up to your irrigation system and all this. Give me an example of what you're talking about.
Chair Kimmler, Schaffler, Escobel. An example that I had personally that happened to me 3 years ago, which kind of set me off on all this, was we were being required to put in 450 feet of lawn, 35 feet wide, right on the urban growth boundary. That amount of lawn for a four-month period during the summer would require 150,000 gallons of water just to water it. We suggested xeriscaping, putting in reducing the amount of water and putting in natural native plants so that they survive without water. That idea was rejected. So the project never went forward. So
may I ask who rejected it?
Right.
Who was the...
Oh, local planning.
Local planning.
Mm-hmm. Titan Arc.
Okay. Thank you. Chair Schaffler?
Mr. Chair, thank you. It didn't go forward, so somebody went without work. Mm-hmm. In this economic climate, we're saying, no, you can't go to work because of these hoops. My yard's full of Doug firs, rhododendrons, and azaleas, and it's beautiful. And I don't have to do anything. I just sit there and watch it grow. I've got to clean up trim every now and then, not often enough, believe me. And then just throw some bark dust down. It's perfectly beautiful, wonderfully landscaped, provides shade, canopy, green. It's beautiful. Yet here we are because of some government regulation and hoop, God knows what else going on. God knows how many people were denied the ability to go to work because of this mountain and blizzard of regulation and oversight that's unnecessary. Thank you.
Co-chair Schaffler, other members of the committee, boy, am I happy we amended this bill on the Senate side and that we are fully supportive of the bill before you today. Representative Tibbs and Senator Olson were able to address the concerns that Representative Doherty expressed regarding tree canopy, mm-hmm. control of invasive species, and stormwater management. Otherwise, as now drafted, we think this bill addresses a lot of the concerns that have been voiced by members of this committee, and we urge its passage.
Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, I guess, a point. You know, we have a lot of citizens that are part of local homeowner groups, and unfortunately they are putting themselves in a situation where they have to ask permission on what kind of plant they put. So I can sympathize, you know, with what you're saying, but also that there are citizens that feel like it's an important step to what, you know, what they want to see when they're in their neighborhoods, what they want to see in their community. But I personally think sometimes this goes way too far. You know, case in point, I think some of these roads are being planned for beautification. We're putting in these strips of trees and whatnot. They're not being maintained. You know, you get a good heavy rain, the bark ends up in the roadway. But more importantly, some of this is coming down to beautification. And what it's doing is actually reducing response times for emergency equipment. And so when people start making these decisions, I just wish that they would take into account the safety of a community and not just how pretty it might look. Because we are doing a lot of things out there that make zero sense for the fire service responders, our police officers as well. And it might look pretty, but those people that are laying on the ground and need immediate help don't care what it looks like. They want somebody there right now. So I support the bill, and I appreciate your testimony. Thanks for being here. Thanks for working the amendments to get it to a point where the chair can help us move this forward, and we're going to go on, and then my buddy and I are going to talk a lot more about plants today, so yeah. Thank you.
Okay, any further questions or comments? Seeing none, thank you very much. Anyone else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 806? Seeing none, we'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 806. Prepared to move this forward?
Sure, Mr. Chair.
Let's open the work session on Senate Bill 806, please.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 806 to to the floor to pass recommendation.
Chair Schauffele moves Senate Bill 806A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I believe this merits the consent calendar as well. It's unanimous in the Senate. It's a perfectly sensible, common sense bill. As much as I would love to carry it,
yes.
I think we should put it on the consent
we'll
calendar.
We'll save a lot of time with you out not ranting and raving, Mr. Chair, with all due respect. Okay, let's put it on the consent agenda then. Thank you very much. Okay, let's have our final hearing of the day on Senate Bill 944.
Mr. Chair, Committee Member, Senate Bill 944A passed unanimously out of the Senate General Government, Consumer and Small Business Protection Committee and the Senate floor. What the measure does is stipulates that the Oregon Liquor Control Commission may not require the on-premises sales licensee from purchasing distilled liquor containers in multiple quantities at one time. If the product is a special order, the single unit requested is valued at least $30, is available from a distributor located in the United States, and that the item can be ordered in a 750-milliliter container if available in that size.
Okay. Mayor Briggs, please, from Senator Shields' office, I believe. Welcome. Please give us your name. Let's proceed.
Sure. Co-Chair Kenemer and Co-Chair Schauffele, members of the committee, I'm Mary Alicia Briggs. I'm the staff person for Senator Shields. He's not able to be here this morning because he's home with his daughter. Senate Bill 944 was drafted on behalf of small businesses in our district. We've worked closely with a gentleman by the name of Tobias Hogan. He owns and operates a restaurant called Eat an Oyster Bar that specializes in Cajun and Creole food. And like other unique restaurants in our district, he offers specialty spirits not found in many other establishments in Oregon. The requirement that a small business licensee purchase an entire case of specialty alcohol is cost prohibitive. This bill would allow small business owners like Mr. Hogan to purchase bottled spirits that are $30 or more a bottle individually rather than by the case. And just to illustrate the kind of cost that we're talking about here, with these types of alcohol that he's purchasing, it could be between $600 and $3,500 for a case. And for businesses that operate on a really tight margin, it's just not feasible to spend that amount of money for something that it's going to take a number of months to go through. And the point was brought up that you know, in some instances, it might make sense for a business to go in together with another business on a case of alcohol and split the cost. But the reality is that you lose your competitive edge when if you end up selling the same specialty spirits. So our office, along with Mr. Hogan, worked with the OLCC to develop the bill that you see here today. We think this bill that will help small businesses stay competitive while ensuring that the OLCC has the ability to operate in a sound manner and also serve the needs of their customers. So on behalf of the small businesses in Oregon and in our committee, or in our district, we would greatly appreciate your support in passing this bill out of your committee. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions or comments?
Makes sense.
Representative Conger.
I just wanted to make sure. I heard you say that the OLCC had worked on this and was supporting the bill.
Yeah, as far as I know, the amendment, the A engrossed bill that passed out of the Senate chamber was a result of OLCC working with Mr. Hogan and our office. So I believe that they would be in support of this.
Chair, if I may follow.
Yeah, Chair Schaffer.
They were all here today. I saw a director in the hall. I'm confident if they had a problem with this, they'd be in.
They'd be back in.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Any further questions or comments? Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Anyone else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 944?
I did submit to you a letter from Mr. Hogan. He wasn't able to be here. They had staff turn over at the restaurant, so he's in the kitchen cooking.
Good. Thank you. Thank you. And we have received that. Okay. See no one else, so we'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 944.
Mr. Chair, I'm ready to move the bill. You are doing it.
I think we are. Let's open a work session on Senate Bill 944.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 944A to the floor to pass recommendation.
Chair Schaffer moves Senate Bill 944A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Good bill should be passed.
Good bill should be passed. I think it looks like that's perhaps the sentiment of the group. Is there any objection? See none, so ordered.
Chair, Teresa, was this unanimous? I think this merits a consent calendar as well.
Okay, it's on the consent calendar. Thank you for expeditiously working on our agenda. We have completed our course for today. If I remember, Teresa, Wednesday...
We will not be meeting, Mr. Chair.
We will not be meeting on Wednesday. We're trying to work... Well, we're working very efficiently, I guess is what I should say. So we will not meet on Wednesday. I think we will be meeting, though, on Friday. Any other comments or...
We will be meeting on Friday.
Yeah, seeing that, we have completed our work and we are adjourned.
Okay. Well, in this...